Okay, today is August 27th. It's our first class on the development of Moshe's character. And we are starting with Moshe's background. And just probably the best few works on this topic. There are, of course, so many Sfarim written all about this, just about this itself. There's a good collection of background of Moshe in a book called Ishei HaTanach. By Ishai Chassidah, you might have gotten it as a bar mitzvah present. There's a coffee table sized book in English. It's called the Encyclopedia of Biblical Characters. I'm sorry, Biblical Personalities. Encyclopedia of Biblical Personalities. Okay, so that's certainly a worthwhile place. There's about 40 pages, all kinds of different categories of Moshe. Right, someone just did it this past week, asked me about he's writing a book on Tehillim, and he heard that Moshe wrote chapters 90 through 100 in Tehillim, and he asked me for the source. Right? So the source starts off with Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra that says that 10 people helped David write Tehillim, and Moshe's on that list. But doesn't tell you which part of Moshe wrote. So I probably could have looked straight into Medrash Shocher Tov, which is the Medrash called Medrash Tehillim, and I would have to look it up, and I found it right there. Ishai Chassidah had one of his 42 topics on Moshe was Moshe's relationship to Tehillim. That whole page of why Chazal say he wrote chapter 9200, what his relationship with each one, how they relate to the 11 chapters, how they relate to the 11 tribes he blessed in Parshas Vezosa Bracha. You know, today with the internet, I guess you can probably look up anything. Plug in Moshe, Sefer Tehillim, and they're going to give you 20 pages. All right, maybe. But if not, this book does a very good job of everything you need to know about Moshe. Right? There are other books. Again, the whole Sefer is written from the standpoint of Moshe's leadership. I would tell you that practically anything Nechama Leibowitz writes in Parsha Shmos, Va'era, Bo, and Beshalach, she has in each one of those parshas two or three excellent treatments of Moshe's personality and Moshe's leadership. Right? You can go to Chukas also, where he hits the rock. Right? You can see some stuff there as well. Okay, Adin Steinsaltz has a treatment of five biblical characters, and Moshe, of course, takes up a large chunk of five biblical portraits. Okay, so I will start with his background compared to Bet. Right? The purpose of this is to actually do a little parshanut with you on the first day. Okay, this is not just a class where we're going to talk about did Moshe do the right thing, could he have done a better thing, what legacy has he left. This is a Bible class, right? It's Tanakh. So we need to give a few credits for this. But so we have to do some Bible, right? Not just Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so let's talk with Perek Beis Pasuk Aleph. Let's just read around. Let's start. Go ahead, please. Yeah. It's good to start with someone in Moshe, right?
Yeah.
Okay, simple enough. Man went from the house of Levi and married a daughter of Levi, or possibly the daughter of Levi. Right? We don't know that yet, but we learn later that she is actually Levi's daughter. We're going to find out soon that this is actually a woman and her nephew. Right? Amram is Yocheved's nephew. Right? And the relationship that the Torah prohibits later. Should that bother anybody? No, the Torah hasn't been given yet. Moshe marries a Midianite to win the sex. Right? The only reason I'm asking you that is, should that be in anybody's commentary? Should anybody make a note on that? Rashi certainly doesn't, Ramban doesn't, Rashbam, but even Ezra does. But Ezra sometimes will tell you things you would never know and would really care about right now. If the text doesn't care to tell me who these two people are, why should even Ezra care? That's just a question you have to learn even Ezra for 20 years to answer, Okay, let me just say, Ibn Ezra does call to attention the fact that this is a marriage prohibited later by the Torah. Right? In the Middle East, we know that the words bas levi isn't parallel to mi base levi. Mi base levi means he's a descendant of Levi. Bas levi doesn't mean a female descendant of Levi. It means the actual daughter of Levi. Chevron was Levi's daughter. Amram was Levi's grandson. Son of Kehas. Kehas and Yocheved, brother and sister. Okay, so... But there is something, besides the parshanut question of what Vayelech is doing there. Can you simplify this pasuk, Moshe? You try. Simplify it. Tell me, what is the pasuk telling me, and what word could I have gotten rid of?
Ish.
Vayelech. Simplify it. Vayikach ish mi beit levi et bat levi. Right? What is the pasuk saying it? How could it have said it more readily and more easily, right? So why did you tell me the extraneous words? That's the stuff of parshanut. Usually what bothers Rashi more than anyone else. Because Rashi is a very close reader. And anything that's out of the ordinary, why did you use this word when a simpler word would have sufficed? That is the stuff that Rashi comments on. But in this particular case, this piques the interest of Ibn Ezra and Ramban as well. Okay? What's the Vayelech doing there? Now, the scientific thing to do would be go to this concordance and see other Vayelechs that seem to be extraneous. There's something to do there. Right? Does every extra Vayelech need to be explained? Yeah, maybe. Okay? Okay, but that's the best thing to do, is to show this is not an uncommon phenomenon. It appears quite often. Right? When the brothers saw Yosef from far, they said, L'chu v'nimkerenu l'yishmael. One of them thinks to say, where should we go first? Right? What do you think it means? Let's go and sell it to these guys. Or if my son is not doing his homework and I run into his room and say, what's the matter with you? It's 10 o'clock at night. Will you go and do your homework already? And he's snarky and he says, where do you want me to go? So what is it? What seems to emerge from here? That this word lechu or vayelech or wherever it appears like this might just be just a filler word that denotes some kind of enthusiasm or
a callback.
It's what?
It's like a callback.
Yeah, there's no reason to darshan it. If someone asks the question, where did he go before marrying her? He seems to be missing the boat, right? It's a worthwhile endeavor to try to figure out what Vayelech means. Right? What is it doing here? Right? But with the brothers of Yosef, how could it be anything more than a call to action? Wouldn't that be the best shot? Okay, let's just read a few more psukim. Okay? There's one other very glaring point that might not hit you in the head in Pasuk Aleph. But it should hit you in the head in Pasuk Bet.
It skips the word stuff.
Okay, we know later, anyone who's going to care enough to tell us that this is an aunt and a nephew, a relationship the Torah prohibits later, also knows that they are only siblings here. Why is it the first child this topic of this course? Right? He has an older brother and an older sister. Why aren't they mentioned? All right, so... Now, when it says "Vatahar va'isha v'teled bein," "Vatero sokitovu with its penevish lo sheyurkin," a lot of things happening in the second pasuk, right? The woman conceived and gave birth to a child. Good Shabbos. Doesn't every woman have to conceive before giving birth to a child? What's that doing there? Right? Okay, fair enough. It's about 50-50 in the Bible. Not everyone gets the description of the conception in the pasuk. Usually it's Vatelet Ben. Is there some significance to this Vatahar that I'm told that she conceived before giving birth to this child? Shabbos, that would have been the case of everyone. Why do you have to tell me? Right? What's Vatero Soki Tovu? What would you do with that? And if he wasn't good, she wouldn't hide him. She said, let's throw him out. It's certainly something to notice, right? And especially the end, but it's B'nai Shloshayot, and she hid him for 3 months. Don't you see there's something, the Torah is begging you to ask? I can picture why she's hiding him. I want to save his life. So, you know, there's something, there's a reason to hide him. Right? The end of the prayer of Aleph said that Paro wants all the boys killed. So I have to hide him from that Zera, which must be just before this. Now we find out that he has a 3-year-old older brother who apparently did not have to undergo this kind of thing. Right? So it must be a relatively new Zera, right? Now, when they come to the house and kill the 3-year-old, also. Right? But more than that, it's an important exercise going on. More than this. If it's shyach to know that they made an effort to hide this kid, right? Can you really feel the essence of a question coming up at the end of this pasuk? Why do I need to know how long she? Who cares? 3 months, 3 years, what does that do for me? She hid him. And when she could no longer hide him, why? My father escaped the ghetto in Lutsk. He hid for the whole duration of the war. He was never caught. He fought with partisans. I understand, when people are trying to kill you, you gotta hide. Does it matter how long that the person is hiding? And if this is a certain way, certainly the way Rashi reads the text. If you just gloss over that, that means, come on, that's just telling me a fact. Not here. Not everyone is bothered by this, but Rashi is. Why do I have to know that she hid him for 3 months? Okay, you get that? Tangent. Noach and his family are told, go on the ark, Noach. You and your sons, your wife and your sons' wives. Then it's Rashi. When they go off, Hashem commands them, Noach, go off the ark, you and your wife, your sons and your sons' wives. Someone might say, there's nothing there. That's just the way they went off. That's the way they went on. No, God commands that. Right? So there must be something going on here. God is purposely changing the order, right? From the men separately and the women separately, marital relations are forbidden on the ark. I'm destroying life. Don't initiate life. Everyone's bizarre. You just play board games on the ark for the year. Right? You go off, I want you to prove, go back to your wives. There's something there. And there's even a motive for such an explanation. You got it? You with me? Now come back to us. Why am I told 3 months? Someone could say, that's just the way it was. If she was able to hide him for 5 months, the pasuk would have said she hid him for 5 months. Why do we need to know that? Just it's information. Rashi does not darshan every single word that's in the Torah. Okay? We'll get back to that. When it says, V'lo yachla od hatzpino, she could no longer hide him, so she made a plan. Does Pasuk Gimel remind you of anything earlier in the Torah? Sometimes narratives are purposely written to remind you of other parts of the Torah that will help define an overall trend of our story. What does it remind you? Another tangent. There's a book called Darkei Ha'agadah. It's written in Hebrew, in a difficult Hebrew, by a man named Yitzchak Heinemann. Yitzchak Heinemann. He divides all midrashim into 5 categories. Every midrash will fall into one of these 5 categories. Right? My intro class, I spent a lot of time discussing the difference between these 5. One of the 5 categories I'm going to call in English. It's theme building. We build a theme. We're going to see some of this maybe in chapter 3 and 4 at the bush. We're building a theme that is background to our story. Each individual point may be really drash, but it builds a background. what background do you get from the way, who cares what she, how she made this ark to save his life? Just say she got a basin and put him in. Come on, talk to me. Why are we being told? Why the extraneous nature of what she's doing to put together this ark? What she's, how is she making sure that the water doesn't seep in? Come on, talk to me. What does it remind you of? What does it bring up? This one pasuk.
Noach.
Of course. Noach. He's using the similar words that appear in Bereishis. Of course, we're being very frum saying this, because we believe that Bereishis and Shmos is from the same author. Right? In academia today, we're going to say that's ridiculous. These two books are written by two very different times. That's creepy, okay? Bereishis and Shmos is from the same author, and Shmos, Perek Beis, is written knowing that Perek Aleph wrote Perek Vav, Zion in Sefer Bereishis, has a command from God to Moshe, to Noach, about how to make the table. That too, one might wonder, why should I care about this detail? That's certainly worthy to ask about the Mishkan also. In the Torah, when it gives us all this detail, it's trying to tell us, this woman is... Can you finish my sentence? She is saving the world. You get it? This woman is saving the world from the flood of slavery and one human being taking another human being and turning him into a beast of burden. Now, it didn't quite end with this man, and there's not even a sort of a Lincoln-esque kind of pasuk in the Torah that says, you don't like being slaves in Egypt, so what I want you to do is outlaw slavery and teach the world that there should never, ever be another slave. There's no pasuk like that. In fact, the first pasuk right after that whole experience at Har Sinai tells us about the Eved Ivri, that this does continue. But, this is a point that I'm sure you've learned from to now, is that you can't understand the Torah Shabbat without very generous helpings of Torah Shabbat explaining what is an Eved. Not just an Eved, the Ivri and Eved Kanani also. Right? Not the ball and chain kind of thing where, all kinds of laws about not running after them and not pursuing them and not handing one in and how they go free and how to set them free. Alright? So that's certainly another conversation some other time. She is doing what Noach is doing. Get it? Okay, that's what Pasuk Gimel is doing. Okay. All of a sudden in Pasuk Dal, we have a sister. At this stage of Pasuk Dalet, I'd like to introduce another topic called foreshadowing. Familiar with this concept? The Torah tells us something at the moment, right? Like, why should I care that Yaakov was wrapped around his brother's heel when he was born? That he should even get named after that? What difference does that make? Twins are always born like that. What significance can there be to the way Yaakov was born? Right? That's foreshadowing something. In fact, the description right before that they were struggling inside her. Again, the Shabbos. Twins do that all the time. In fact, one baby does that all the time. Why is the Torah telling me such a common event? Get it? You're going to see two themes coming through. Rashbam writes on that pasuk. They were moving inside her the way fetuses often do. Now, what Rashi says on that pasuk is definitely drash. Because there's no way that unborn babies have intention to know when the mother is walking past the base of Medrash, when the mother is walking past the place of Medrash. Sorry, you know what I'm talking about, right? Medrash at the end of Sanhedrin that Rashi quotes. Right? Or that they're fighting over Nachash Shneolam. Rashi wasn't sure whether the word Yisro Tetsu means to run,
or to struggle, race tzadik tzadik. So Rashi gave you two perushim, one that captures the possibility of each one of those sharushim. I have to make some significance over this description in the Torah of Yisro Tetzuah Banim Bekirvah. If my grandson Rashbam is correct, then it means they were just moving around her. Kederach Ubrim. Kederach is a word Rashbam loves. Right? Explains a lot of things. That's the way it is. You don't want the darshan. That's just a common thing. Right? So, Rashi would say, Rashbam, why, you know, Shmuel, why did you, why would the Torah care to just tell me something that's a common thing? Must be significance to it. Okay? The significance of mentioning the sister, I mean, that's the way, it's part of his salvation. A few things to notice. All the people involved in saving the Jewish boys here in Egypt, including this one, are women. There's a shifra, there's a pua, there's a mother, there's a daughter, there's a bas para. I don't see the father in having anything to do with this. Where is he? He's at a community meeting. Why is the father involved in this? Did you send a 5-year-old daughter? Not. Right? Alright, that's a strategy the Midrash should talk about, but notice that this salvation of this boy is at the hands of women throughout. And that this woman is connected to water. That's going to show up later again and again in the Torah about Miriam. This course is about Moshe, but there are some, this later on we talk about his siblings. Okay, got it? This is an example of foreshadowing. And it's a stage that was already set in Bereshis, that the women are the ones who determine the generational flow. It's Sarah, not Abraham, who determines where the next generation is going. It's Rivka, not Yitzchak, who determines that. Right? It causes some enmity with the Yitzchaks and the Esavs of the world. With the Ishmaels and the Esavs of the world. Think Islam and Christianity. Right? The next generation, it just blows up. Yosef is sold. I take liberty to say, and I think I'm correct, that had Rochel been alive, Yosef would not have been sold. Do you agree? Rachel would have taken him aside and said, "Not Yosef, stop with the dreams. Look in front of your brothers with that coat. I understand you're your father's favorite, and I get it, and I'm okay with that. Don't tell us those bad reports. This is nuts. This is crazy. You're so immature as to not know that you're at 17, you're bringing the enmity upon yourself." Yosef has come out helpless. He really believes he's seen prophecies, and he has to share it. The last pasuk in the Haftorah of Parshas Vayeshev, which is ostensibly the least connected Haftorah of all Haftorahs of the year. The connection is, it starts, Al Shloshati Sheh Yisrael, Al Amarlo Yishimenu, Al Mikhram Ba Kesef Tzadik, Ve Yom Ba Hur Na'alayim. Right? Even Rashi of that pasuk, it almost says this is not talking about Yosef. Certainly, Ben Ezra and Radak and everybody else. Talking about the disgusting, despicable custom at that time of selling people into slavery because they can't pay back a debt on shoes. But because the Orech of the Haftorahs connected this to Vayeshev, came the Targum Yonah son that said Yosef was sold for shoes. It doesn't say that. It says he was sold for 20 pieces of silver. Right? The last pasuk of that Haftorah is Hashem Diber Midlo Yinove. God speaks to you, got to speak, got to say it. If you think God is talking to you, you've got to share it. Everything Yosef experienced was a prophecy. He believed it, and he was right. He had to share his dreams. Because when God speaks to him, you've got to speak. It's amazing connection to Haftorah. And then once you go with that start, you see the Haftorah is all about the Yosef story. Every part of the Haftorah is about the Yosef story. It's such a chiddush that it is really what Nevi'im do. Nevi'im take a whole mindset and it says, my words are meant, like what I just did with
with Moshe's mother and the table of Noach. Levim do it all the time. It's a big chiddush. The fact that on the face of it, the Torah of Yosef, of the Yosef story seems to be totally disconnected from the Parsha, but when you take them, you get the light bulb and you say, hey, I can connect this. Every part of that Torah is meant to show the people living in the time of Amos, you are behaving like Yosef's brothers, Sinas Chinam, and where that's taking you. Okay, back to Yosef. If Rachel were alive, Yosef would have been sold. Do you agree? The mothers determine where the generations are going. Of course, it's the man who makes the final decision. It's just the woman who tells him what the decision is. Right? Moshe is the redeemer. But there is no redemption if this doesn't continue. The women are behind in the same. Okay, that's part of this, what's going on. That's why it's the sister and Bas Parah who are negotiating what's going to happen to this boy. Until he grows up. And then the mother gets him back for a little bit, sends him back, because maybe she's also aware that there's something going on here. Right? Okay? I mean, Chazal said it unequivocally on the Pasuk Vatera Ki Tov. Familiar with that? Rashi says the house was filled with light. Rashbam says he was born healthy. Right? Miki Tofu. Every baby is cute. Alright, some of you. Alright. Okay. But, and what's fascinating is that if you look at, collect all, in Yishai Chassid, there's a whole two pages on this, about Moshe's birth. Compare it to Christian theology about how Jesus is born. I think in traveling from Nazareth to Bethlehem or something like that. And it's totally co-opted one from the other. Right? You hear it? Okay. That's very interesting. There's a man named James Kugel who writes a lot on that. Does his name ring a bell? James Kugel. K-U-G-E-L. He taught at Harvard for many years. He lives in Israel. He used to daven in my shul. James Kugel. Right? He used to give classes, Bible classes in Harvard to 1,200 students. I took a rent out of an auditorium for him to give those classes. Right. He writes all about these kind of things like I just described. Okay, back to our story. There's one thing none of you captured yet. Can you feel it? There's something terribly missing in our story. It should be jumping out at you. And his mother. Why don't you tell me who these people are? So that goes along with why am I told about his older brother and sister, right? I mean, the brother I don't know about now, but there's a sister here, for goodness sakes. Another tangent. You've heard of Karais? Right? They don't know from Midrashim. They don't know from Torah Shabbat Peh. But they're very good at reading text. I took two semesters of Karai literature here at graduate school 35 years ago. Very fascinating material. Anything is on the table. Right? And here they say that this is a sister that's only the child of one of these parents that they brought into this new marriage. First of all, that doesn't explain the brother that's missing, because the brother is 3 years older later in the Torah. We're learning that when Moshe's 80, he's 83. All right, so they say that brother was also born to a different, you know what I'm saying? Yocheved was married to another man, and she had Aaron and Miriam with that other man. Okay, that appears in Karaite literature. I say it's bunkum. It's nonsense. Parshas Pinchas. And by the way, Karaites are very firm about the Torah being of one author. They're very, you know, the Gemara says that the Tzedukim, when they keep a mitzvah, they keep it better than we do. Right? It says in Parshas Pinchas that these are the three children Yocheved gave birth to: Amram, Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe. Come on. That's not an answer here. The Torah purposely is hiding me all this information. It's hiding from me. The information about these two older siblings, as well as the fact that even the names of the parents. In fact, That would be an answer to why am I not told about the older siblings? The answer is, I don't want to distract anything from this boy. I don't want any tangents. In fact, I'm not even telling you his parents. Okay? You recognize this pasuk? Vayigi mei shvot ha-shoftim. Ve'yimech ish u'vei lechem Yehuda. But it doesn't tell you the man is. Beginning of Ruth. And it says that this man from Yehuda went from Beis Lechem, he went to see places they mowed a lot, telling me in that first pasuk, without telling me who this is. But the next pasuk does. It says, "V'shem ha'ish Abimelech, v'shem ishto Naomi, v'shem shtei banav." Come on, why couldn't pasuk bet say after Vayelchish mibeis Levi and tell me the man's name, tell me the wife's name? The answer is the Torah does not want to give off on any tangent about anyone. The first chance it'll get, it'll give you the background of this boy's family. Right, that's in Parashas Va'era. Does it sound familiar? Gives you like a lot of background. It starts with Reuven and Shimon, and it goes to Levi, and it stops. A lot of questions on that too, but that's not going to bother us in this course. Okay, you got it. So the Torah doesn't want more to give from this tangent. So, but that I will tell you does seem to be on Rashi's mind when he explains what is Va'era doing there. They could be Vayetz, does this pasuk sound familiar? Vayavo Abraham, Nispod, the Sarah, Viliv Kosa, it's a little small bit, Chav there, Viliv Kosa, it's a pasuk in Parshas Vayetzar. Go ahead, what's the same parsha in Rashi? Where did it come from? Why not just say, Vayispod Abraham, the Sarah, Vayiv Kosa? Why Vayavo Abraham? It's just an unusual that you have to say this spoke. Just use the verb. Why did you waste your verb on Vayavo? So Bereish Shabbos says Mehecha Bo. Where was he coming from? Right? I heard a cute thing. Rabbi, the Medrash Bereishis Rabba mentions two things. He came from Terah's funeral. If you look at the Cheshire, when Terah dies around now, or he came from Har Moriah from Kedesh. And that's these two words backwards, mehar, ba, or aviv, right? Who knows what goes into a medrash? What did the medrash do to say that this is a second marriage? Right? So on the face of it, it could be vayelech, holach, ba'atzak ito. Okay. Midrashically, it means a man from the house of Levi went after his daughter's advice and took back his wife. What answer does that willy-nilly also take care of? Why is his brother and sister mentioned? The answer is, they were born from their first marriage. They were divorced in between. And when he took her back, we'll learn it. Prodding of Miriam herself, right? This is indeed the first birth since then. Okay, you with me? You're familiar with that, right? I just want to tell you a little scholarship now. A little scholarship. Let's look at this Rashi, please. One point. You see it? You see the Rashi of Pasuk Aleph? The Kaf is Pasuk Levi. You want to see it? Might have to turn back to, the typeset has it on the back in the original place. You see it? Anyone like to read? Someone on the spot? Okay, I'll read it starting. Harush Hayami Paro. He was separated from her because of the Zerah of Paro. Now, you see parentheses coming afterwards? Does everybody here have parentheses coming up? In all your versions, I gave you four. We have four different versions of Perush Rashi, four different approach scholars. You see? Notice? All right? They all have parentheses here. Okay? The Chozar v'lekacho. He took her back. That's what Vayelech is coming to teach. He went went after his daughters by Shamrolo, Gzeratcha, Hashem Yishal Paro. Your decree is worse than Paro. Paro goes, Zara Mazacharim, Vato Gamkin, Alanikinos. Your decree is worse than Paro's. He's just killing the boys. You are preventing boys and girls from being born. And see the next word? You all have the Rashi Yashan. Have you ever learned in high school what that means? Anybody ever tell you what Rashi Yashan is? 100 of them in the Torah. So it could be that this is some over 300 different manuscripts of Rashi al Torah. Okay, the first ones were typeset by Goyim in the 15th century. We didn't have access to printing. So they kept Jews from printing, but then they realized that while Jews represent a small minority of the population of Europe, they represent the majority of the readers of Europe, and it was good money to print for Jews. So they put together boards of Jews, and but it was led by Goyim to typeset what they thought was the real Rashi. A lot of mistakes creep in that way. The first scientific edition of Rashi, the first scientific edition of any commentary, is in 1876 by a man named Avraham Berliner. I have a copy of his book in my office. And he redid it in 1905 again. What he did was he took hundreds of manuscripts of Rashi, he could have 150, 170, hundreds, but and he compared all of them. And he made a lot of corrections. And in the notes, he says, very famous one in last week's parsha, where Rashi says that you should continue to wear tefillin and mezuzahs even after you go into Galus, so that it's not new to you when you get back to Israel. Lo hayu v'lo nivra, the Medrash that Rashi's quoting, and he quotes the pasuk, the Medrash quotes, is trumas and maestros. Keep giving trumas and maestros when you leave Israel, so it's not new to you. Tefillin and mezuzahs you keep in France because it's a doraisa. Right? Trumas and maestros, tof vav mem, became tefillin and mezuzahs from trumas and maestros. And I understand why. The next pasuk mentions tefillin and mezuzahs. After that, it says, tefillin is the next two mitzvahs and tefillin and mezuzahs. Right? So someone made a mistake, and it kept on getting printed. And a mistake even got into Ramban. Ramban mentions that. That's how old the mistake is. Ramban usually had the right manuscripts of Rashi. He's a very good reader of Rashi. He quotes him very precisely. Right? But according to Berliner, Ramban got this wrong. Not his fault, but he had a manuscript that made a mistake in it. Right? So Berliner comes up with the first scientific edition, and he never includes Rashi Yashan. He thinks it's not Rashi. In fact, we know who Rashi Yashan is. Every time there's a Rashi Yashan, it's the words of a commentary to Rashi. His name is Rav Yitzchak Ber Yisachar, 15th century commentary to Rashi. His name is Rav Yitzchak. It was a code of honor. Whenever you made a comment to the manuscript next to a great, especially great commentary like Rashi, you put your initials to make sure that everybody knew that's not the original author. See, if I write notes next to this Rashi, everyone's going to know that it's not the original Rashi. This is plain handwriting. This is a print. But when the whole thing is handwritten, and you write in your own notes, you may be able to hang on a tall tree to get your words studied by students 700 years from now, thinking it's Rashi when it's not. Okay, you get it? So, Rabbi Yitzchak became Rashi Yashan. It doesn't appear in French and German manuscripts at all. That's the first telltale sign. And it only begins appearing in about the 15th century. We don't have any Rashis dating back to even to the beginning of the 13th century. For 100 years after Rashi died, we don't have anything in his handwriting. Or, of course, not his handwriting when he's dead. But anything of, we call it Perush of Rashi on the Torah, certainly. The oldest is like, they used to say 1240 was the oldest, right before the book burning in France, 1242. But the Yitzchak Ber Yisachar is Rashi Yashan. Here is a great clue, because what is the thing in the Pasuk that makes Rashi say this was a second marriage? Look at the Divrei Maskil. Vayikach. If they're just getting married, why is Moshe mentioned first? The answer is because this isn't a first child born from this marriage. They're married before, they had two children then, they got divorced, and now they're going to be married. Okay, to say that it's Vayelech that determines that this is a second marriage actually contradicts Rashi. He chose not to say that Vayelech is the source of this marriage. What does Rashi do with Vayelech? Chose not to
comment on it.
Okay. Let's get into why is this Matara Isha?
Look at Pasuk Gimel and Rashi. Lo yachla od hatzpina. She could no longer hide him. Okay, everyone see the Rashi? I'm reading Pasuk Gimel. Shemanu lo hamitzriyim miyom shechzira. The Egyptians started to make a cheshbon from the day that they remarried. V'hi yiladato l'shisha chadoshim biyom echad. She gave birth to him after 6 months. It was the beginning of a 7-month baby. Okay. So whenever someone got married, they would return after 9 months, right? To see if there's a baby in the house. See if she looks, let's check the women, do they look pregnant? Okay, looks like you're going to have a baby in 2 months. They come back and see if it's a boy or a girl. Get it? So she knew she would have 3 months before they start checking and looking in all the corners and looking underneath and looking at the bedboards. Right? Okay, you all with me? This statement contradicts not one, but two Gemaras. One is Gemara in Sota, which is one of the amazing midrashic expositions of a section of Torah in the entire Shas. You have 2-3 page dafim of Gemara, not blot, the full daf of Gemara, all about Perek Beis and Gimel of Shmos. It's an amazing, it's off the Mishnah that says that because Miriam waited for Moshe for a few minutes, B'nai Yisrael waited for her for 7 days in order to discuss Midah Keneged Midah. Okay? It's because the Sota gets Midah Keneged Midah, so it lists other cases in Tanakh, and then the Gemara gets off on a tangent about this story. The Gemara asks the question also, why was she able to hide it for 3 months? Our question was more, why does the Torah care to tell me that she was able to hide it for 3 months? The Gemara says the same, all right, let's say it's the same question. Why was she able to hide it for 3 months? So the Gemara says the following. And Rashi knows this. He quotes all these statements are from the Gemara in Sota. Dafyut, Dafyudah, Fyudbez, Gimel. And Rashi writes, and the Gemara says, that when Amram divorced her, unbeknownst to him, she was pregnant with Moshe. They were separated for 3 months. When he took her back, she gave birth 6 months later. 6 months later, to a full-term baby. Why didn't Rashi write this parish? And I said there are two Gemaras Rashi contradicts. You know what the other one is? It says in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, it gives the list of all the Mesoras that we have in Tanakh for the babies born after 6 months. Guess who's not on that list? Okay. There's some disputes whether it's Yitzchak with Shmuel, whether it's Yaakov or Esav, whether it's there are different opinions. But there are Rabbi Shuri, Rabbi Yeshua, different opinions of who the 6 month babies are in Tanakh. Shvatim, but no one has Moshe on their list. According to Rashi, Moshe should have been there. So you have to answer the question: what's Rashi's source? Right? Can you print up Moshe 6 months? Moshe born after 6 months. Who says it? It's probably going to come up with Rashi. There's only one source where this appears in all of rabbinic literature. The address to go to turn to for this opinion would be a sefer called Torah Shleima. Familiar with it? Not in Kasha. Torah Shleima. It's a whole book on each Kasha. He lived past 100. He only got up to Parshas Maaseh. He didn't finish the bar. So you see this big, now they're all, it used to be about 45 or 50 volumes, because sometimes one parsha had 2 volumes. And now they've condensed it into 10 volumes, about this thick, very thin paper now. It's called Torah Shlema. You look at this pasuk, the Torah Shlema, he'll go through this whole issue. Where is there a samasora? And it's here on this page. It's in Targum Yonah son Ben Uziel to the Torah. You have it, Yonah Uziel, Shalom. Yosef ben Uziel to the Torah is our, you see, the Yilada Beer, she gave birth to a son, Besok Shita Yarchin. You see it, the top line there? Not all of you probably, you all have the top line on the side? Yeah, probably. See?
I am so
after 6 months. That's our source. Now we have to ask, who is Tara Yonason to the Torah? Well, at the beginning of Megillah says, Onkelus wrote to the Torah, Yonason wrote to Nevi'im. It's usually called in scholarly circles pseudo-Jonathan. It's not really Yonason. But it is a source, and it's in the Mikros Gedolos. Okay, we'll talk another time what this Yerushalmi is. Why did Rashi reject the two Gemaras to say he was a six-month baby? Look at the beginning of Pasuk Bet and tell me. Yeah. It's very, very strange that the Tahar happens before Pasuk Aleph. Get it? So what is the Gemara doing? The Gemara doesn't have to answer that question. The Gemara is not constrained by the pshat that Rashi constrained himself. Rashi is not a blind copier of what the Gemara says. He'll say everything the Gemara says, even if it defies your logic, he'll say water rises up into the well, into Rivka's pail. Right? As long as he thinks that can be derived from the words of the Pasuk, then he'll write it. But here, I'm sorry, to say that this woman was pregnant before Vayelech Ish Mibeis Levi VeKapas Bas Levi does not fit. I think Rashi would have copied out the Gemara in Sota had Pasuk Bet not begun with the word Matar. Had it just said Vatelet Bein, then Rashi would say, okay, she gave birth to a child 6 months later, to a full-term baby. You get it? The important lesson here is that Rashi is not a blind copier of Talmudic explanations. He will copy it, even if it defies logic sometimes, if he feels that is the plain message of the text. Okay, we did a lot of stuff here to give some of the background of Moshe's family. On Thursday, we are going to start with Vayigdal Hayeled, Pasuk. Pasuk Yud, I think it is. Yeah. Pasuk Yud. We're going to start with Yud. Not Yud Aleph with the third Aliyah, but Yud. Okay? All right, make sure you come with this. And I'd ask you to just read one Perush. In the beginning of Perush Bet, Ramban. Ramban to Pasuk Al-Fayyid. Just read enough of where he quotes Rashi, he quotes Ibn Ezra, and then he critiques both. Okay? Start next class with Ramban to Pasuk Al-Fayyid. Okay, everyone good? Have a great day, everybody. Shkach.